Hello, this is Dr. Dimitrios Kostopoulos, and this is another episode of the podcast Precision in Clinical Practice, Boosting Profits and Patient Outcomes with Diagnostics. And today we have put together for you a very, very interesting podcast that promises to provide you with gems, ideas, and tips that can take your clinical practice to the next level. I hope you enjoyed. Let's listen to it.
Chad and Carl, thank you. This has been an amazing summit event with lots of information, and thank you for the invitation to speak about this very important subject. So today I will be addressing the subject of how to achieve patient compliance, better outcomes, and higher reimbursements, because believe it or not, these are things that take place in a private practice that they are all interconnected. So just a couple of things about myself. I'm Dimitrios Kostopoulos. I am a physical therapist now for over 33 years. I have a master's and a PhD in physical therapy, a doctorate of science in clinical electrophysiology, and a DPT. And also, I have a degree in medicine. I'm board certified in clinical electrodiagnostics, and I'm a clinical affiliate assistant professor at FAU School of Medicine. I am the co-founder of the Hands-On Organization, which is an organization that spans from the area of physical therapy to education and diagnostics. I am speaking in a weekly basis with many, many physical therapists across the country, and I hear from them the worries that they have, the anxiety that they have about different things. And I will be discussing some of these things along with solutions in today's presentation. So what will you get from this presentation? I am aiming for you to get some methods on improving the number of completed plans of care, because that is part of patient compliance. I'll be discussing procedures that will increase your frequency of treatments, and they will decrease your no-shows. I will further discuss successful actions on how to get your patients to refer friends and family back to your practice. Also, some proven methods for better outcomes, and also about technologies that can help you increase your per-visit reimbursement by 25 to 47% with your existing patients. All right, so why this matters even more now? Why these things we're talking about matter now even more than before? Well, as physical therapy practices are on the road to recovery from COVID-19, the financial stability of the practices is extremely important. And financial stability can be affected by many different things, including the compliance, the degree of compliance that your patients have when they decide to attend or not attend their appointments, the frequency through which they will be attending their appointments, and so on and so forth. So if you think about this, if you kind of consider not to do something different right now, not to take any additional action, if it is same old, same old, then you are looking at a very slow path to recovery if you fully recover financially from the whole situation with COVID-19. To the contrary, those practices who are really taking appropriate action, and in this summit, there have been so many suggestions and so many ideas about things that you need to be doing right now in your practice to put you into the fast track to recovery. So those practices who are really making the decision to implement important things right now, those practices, not only they will recover faster, but many of them, they'll manage to really surpass their numbers, both in terms of patients and financially in the months to come. So the very first thing I would like to talk about is a very important principle, that control equals income. And I want you just to see this from a common sense point of view. If you are able to control, let's say, the phone calls that your front desk is answering and managing to convert every phone call to a booked appointment, that will result in greater income. If you are able to control the frequency of visits in your office that each patient has, that will result in income. If you are able to control your cancellations, your no-shows, if you are able to control your payroll, if you are able to control the referrals you get from patients, from friends and family, if you are able to control your billing and collections from insurances and patients, all these activities, when you control them, they result into higher income. So we derive to this equation that control equals income. And when we achieve a greater control in the various areas of the practice, that eventually leads to a higher income. And what we will be discussing in this presentation are methods that you can implement right now in your practice that will provide greater control, especially in the areas of patient visits and patient compliance, that will eventually result into a higher income in your practice. I want you to just look for a moment. When we are talking about compliance, what do we mean? I mean, looking at the dictionary, this is the definition of compliance: the act or process of complying to a desire, demand, proposal, or regimen, or to coercion. And actually, the example there, the sentence that was used by Merriam-Webster's dictionary is very appropriate here. Patient compliance in completing the treatment regimen was excellent. So that was a very, very good example, very appropriate right from the dictionary. So this is what we mean when we're talking about compliance. But let's look now those areas where compliance can be affected or can be affected by in the physical therapy practice. What patient compliance means within the physical therapy private practice. How about completed plans of care with an official discharge or final end of care visit? How important is for the patient to have a completed plan of care, that you do not just have to discharge the patient at the end just to close the record from your EMR, but actually the patient has completed their entire plan of care. They have been to an actual final visit. How important that is. How important is it for a patient to maintain the recommended frequency of appointments? When you tell the patient, I want you to come 3 times a week for physical therapy, and the patient ends up coming once a week, or they keep scheduling appointments and missing appointments, how does that affect the patient outcomes and also your practice? Keeping all appointments, making sure that the cancellations and no-shows are very low. How about engaging to any physical therapist recommended additional services? In your office, you may be offering additional services. You may be offering laser. You may be offering insoles. You may be offering massage. You may be offering, like we offer, diagnostic testing. How important is for the patient to engage, to be convinced, to comply with those additional services that you recommend to them? In my opinion, that is one of the most important and most critical points. Specifically, and I'll talk a little bit about that later on, but specifically in our practice, in our situation, and in the practices of more than 185 practices around the country of people that we are consulting and helping to in their practices, that single item, the ability to engage the patient in any physical therapist recommended additional services can have not only a tremendous impact in the patient care, but a tremendous impact up to 50% more in the patient value, in the revenue, in the financial patient value, in the revenue that derives from that patient in the practice. And we'll talk more about that later on. And how about assigning within that compliance also the ability to refer friends and family back to the physical therapy practice? So, and it's very important to also look at what is the worth of one appointment. And when that one single appointment is missed, what does that mean? What are the effects of that in the practice? I have an example here for you. I'm taking as an example that a physical therapy patient does, on the average, let's say 10 physical therapy visits during their physical therapy experience, 10 visits. And I'm going to use as amount of reimbursement per visit, $97. And the reason I'm going to use this $97 figure is because this is the figure that was benchmark from the data from the peer-to-peer group from the private practice section of the American Physical Therapy Association. So if I multiply now 10 visits that the patient is supposed to come in times $97 a visit, many of you are much lower than that. I understand that, but let's work with these numbers now. That patient financial value for those 10 visits are $970. Some of you may be getting less reimbursement per visit, but maybe more visits. So give or take, it's going to be about $1,000, the financial value of that patient. Now, nationwide, physical therapy profit margins, again, based on same data from the private practice section of the APTA, of the peer-to-peer group, 2019, was around 12% across the nation. So in other words, if you are making, let's say, $970, that 12% is approximately $116 of profit you are making from that patient. Okay, so if it was $1,000, it would be $120. Now, what would it mean if this patient, instead of arriving 10 times in their appointments, they arrive only 9 times? What if they miss a single visit, one single visit? What does this mean to you financially? That is a loss of $97. What does that do? What is the impact in actually your final profit margin? It can be very significant. Or what if a patient has 3 times a week appointments, let's say, and misses one appointment because of a no-show or an inappropriate cancellation, where you are unable to fill that spot again with another patient? What happens in that case? And what happens if you have a very low, let's say, percentage of arrivals, where, let's say, only 80% of your patients arrive to their appointments as they're supposed to, and you have a 20% rate of inappropriate cancellations and no shows? What that impact would be if you are losing 20 visits out of every 100 visits that you are supposed to have in your schedule? That is very, very significant number. Okay, so we're going to talk about how to handle that as well. So you see, I remember John Gray's Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. Do you guys remember that book? Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. John Gray wrote that book, oh my gosh, many, many years ago, probably I would say 15 years ago or so. So what is the bottom line in that book? The bottom line is that different people have different realities. You have a reality, which reality has been formed based on your experiences in life and your observations, and the patient has a different reality about their condition based on their experiences, their knowledge, and their observations. And really, what is real is what is real to someone based on their observations. What is real to you is real to you based on your observations and your experiences in life. The patient has not finished physical therapy school. The patient has no reality about the effects of non-action to a joint. They have no idea about the effects of no movement to a joint, to a muscle, to the body in general. So if the patient has no reality about that, the idea is, how do we help them to share our reality, which comes from an educated point of view, to their reality, and create some sort of agreement where those two realities are coming together? That's the idea. Because a patient, why are they going to disagree with you and they are not going to show up to an appointment, or they won't comply with their treatment plan? They won't complete their entire treatment plan and plan of care. Why they won't do that? They won't do that because somehow, somewhere deep inside, they may have a disagreement with what you have prescribed, what you have put together. So you need to provide them with all the appropriate information so that they can come into a common agreement with you. So the question is, when we do that? Well, you remember Blink, right? Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, again, long time ago. But what was the idea on that book? That decisions are being made at a heartbeat. People are deciding about things most times based on their first impressions. What is a patient's first impression? It is that very first visit, the initial evaluation visit, that they will come to see you. It is during that visit that you must really properly communicate and take advantage of that visit to give them the reality that is the correct reality, if you want, if you wish, for their situation. So what are some of the important steps here? During that first visit that the patient comes in, you need to include within your office policy, which the patient has to read, that the patient has to complete all the prescribed sessions and complete their treatment plan. Because that completion of the treatment plan is what provides the chances for resolution of their problem. There you need to include a no-show policy in your initial paperwork. And what we do in our no-show policy is that we include the statement that if the patient no-shows, there are three people who will get hurt. First, they will get hurt because they will not get better. Second, another patient will get hurt who could have taken that spot in the schedule that they are missing right now. And number three, the therapist gets hurt because instead of them having the number of patients they're supposed to have in their schedule and work, now they have a patient less. Also, in our initial paperwork, we include the financial policy. And in that financial policy, we do have actually a pretty steep a penalty, if you wish, of $75 as an inappropriate cancellation or no-show fee. That is the time that you need also to explain about the frequency of care. Why is it important for the patient to come in, let's say, three times a week? A patient may have considerations about that. Oh, I have a busy schedule at work. I have this, I have that. But do you provide them with a good enough understanding so that they really understand why they must come three times a week or two times a week or four times a week, whatever the recommended frequency should be based on your clinical evaluation and best practices of patient care for this specific pathology? So perhaps that's the time to discuss with them what happens to soft tissue when you gain, let's say, 20 degrees in range in one session. If you don't get another session, let's say, in an appropriate time, within a day or two, what will happen to that tissue? So those are some things that you will need really to discuss directly with the patient so that the patient gets into an understanding. And then make an agreement with the patient. Agree in the room with the patient about what their treatment plan is and what the frequency of treatment is, and explain to them why they should not miss an appointment. And this is written, at least in our office, in the form of an agreement where the patient signs and we sign. Okay? So, and then there is a very important step. This important step is I would say, what has created a huge impact in our very successful right now, cancellation and no-show rate. Our percentage of arrivals is very high, in the neighborhood of 97%, sometimes 98%. And this is the concept of public announcement. So I have a little video that I have created that I will show you right now with a mock-up patient so that you can get the idea of how the public announcement concept is taking place. Now, in the video you're going to watch, I am using the public announcement not only for physical therapy, I'm using the public announcement also for diagnostic testing that we provide to the patients. But in your practice, just take the same concept of the public announcement and apply it for the physical therapy treatments, okay? So let's watch this quick video.
Okay, Mrs. Smith, based on the results of my physical examination to you and also based on the assessment questionnaire that you filled out, I will develop now a preliminary treatment plan for you. And I will also have you do a quick nerve test and also a quick ultrasound, like taking a picture of your nerves, so that we can get some specific results from these diagnostic tests and create a more precise, more appropriate treatment plan for you. After the patient is being informed and agrees to the treatment as well as to the diagnostic testing, then a very important component is going to take place. You literally take that patient from the room and you walk that patient to the front desk. You're not just telling the patient, you go now and schedule your appointments. You are actually taking that patient and you are walking them as the treating provider to the front desk. And at the front desk, you make what is called a public announcement. All right, so Tula, this is Mrs. Smith. She's going to be coming for physical therapy 3 times a week, and she needs an EMG and an ultrasound in the next testing session, okay? All right, please schedule here. Good to meet you, Mrs. Smith.
Thank you.
All right, take care. You see, the agreement that you made with a patient about treatment 2 days a week, 3 days a week, whatever, or them receiving diagnostic testing, EMG, ultrasound, or whatever, is an agreement that you made with the patient. And an agreement of this kind is not as strong as it is a public announcement. So the definition of a public announcement is something known to more than 2 people. So with the secretary now, you are announcing with the patient next to you to the secretary that this patient will be receiving treatment for so many days a week, plus they will be getting their diagnostic testing done on a specific day. So that provides you with a much greater control on the patient case.
All right, so that is the idea I wanted you to get about the how powerful the public announcement is to increase compliance with your patients in keeping their appointments, because it is now known, the agreement that was made between you and them is now known to at least a third person. And that is an extremely powerful thing. Okay. Now, how do you get friend and family referrals from that patient? Well, the answer really is ask for help at the right time. So here is how I do this, okay? So after the initial evaluation took place, the public announcement, the agreement, the public announcement took place, and the patient comes in now for at least a week, at least 3 visits, or a week and a half. I would like to see 3 actually sessions, because within three sessions, you will have definitely some results in most cases. At that time, we do a re-evaluation session. At the re-evaluation session, obviously, the question is, how are you feeling? How much better are you feeling? So if the patient is not really feeling any better right now, yet, that is not the right time for you to ask for a referral of a friend or a family member. But if the patient tells you, oh, I feel great, I feel so much better, thank you guys for all the help you are providing to me. So when the patient has good indicators of feeling better and feeling good, has a good experience with your office, then that is the time where you can say, listen, Mrs. Smith, I need your help. And of course, Mrs. Smith is going to ask you, what do you need? And then you say, the way we grow our practice is from referrals of friend and family members of our existing patients. And then you ask the question to Mrs. Smith, who do you think from your family or friends could use our services? And maybe if Mrs. Smith is puzzled a little bit and she cannot answer the question, you may enlighten her at that time about the possibilities of physical therapy. Maybe you, at that point, you may ask some questions such as, does anybody have back pain, neck pain, osteoarthritis, any numbness, tingling, weakness? So you can probe these type of questions so that you can give them once again some better reality and better understanding about physical therapy. Don't make assumptions that they will know, because they may not. So then why patients will stop coming to physical therapy? Well, there are two possibilities. Either they are still in pain or they are out of pain. So let's take the possibility that they are out of pain. That is fantastic. Very good job. But you know what? The fact that somebody stops feeling pain, should they stop coming to physical therapy? Have you completely finished everything you had to do just because the patient feels no longer pain? No, you have not finished your job. As a matter of fact, your job is not finished until you do that final visit, final care visit with the patient, and you prescribe to them, let's say, a long-term home exercise program. So again, you have to call, get the patient back in for continuation of care and for that final visit. But what if the patient is still in pain? What if after so many visits, you have not managed to really resolve the patient's problem? And the question is, did you get the right diagnosis and did you perform the most appropriate treatment for that patient? Well, how did you derive to the physical therapy diagnosis? Yes, you got a script perhaps or not from the doctor. Now in more and more cases where there is direct access, there is no script, or there might be a very generic script, you know, treat the neck or something like that, without any other specifics. How did you derive to this diagnosis? Well, you followed the model, the current model for physical therapy, where you did a physical therapy evaluation, you created a treatment plan, an intervention, then a reevaluation, continuation of PT until you had the end of care. And that formation of a treatment plan was based on specific evaluative procedures that you did. You did range of motion, you looked at manual muscle test, but also you looked at many different orthopedic and neurologic tests. We call them special tests. And your ability to identify the proper diagnosis on that patient is contingent to how appropriately these tests can screen for a condition. Screening of a condition relates to the sensitivity of a specific test. That's why we use many times combinations of tests. But you can see here how low sensitivities we have in some of the most prominent orthopedic and neurologic tests that we do. For cervical radiculopathy, for God's sakes, the sensitivity of Sperling's test, which is probably the number one test that we use for neck patients, is 30%. This means that it opens the door for 70% of the patients who do have a confirmed cervical radiculopathy for the Sperling's test to be negative, not to be able to identify the condition. You get a false negative. So how about a false negative? Is it okay to have a 70% false negative? Just imagine that the coronavirus test had a 70% false negative percentage. Would that be a good test? Would that be reliable? Would you like to go and get a COVID-19 test knowing that you have only 30% chance for that test to show you that you have coronavirus if you do have coronavirus? Not very good, right? So alternatively, you can use the new paradigm in physical therapy. This is what we have been using. And the new paradigm in physical therapy, which includes diagnostic testing, such as EMG, ultrasound, and other tests within the realm of that PT evaluation or right after it, that type of testing provides much higher percentages of sensitivity. And therefore, we are able to identify conditions that otherwise we wouldn't have identified just with the regular physical examination tests. As a matter of fact, we published a study earlier this year, and that study specifically for electromyography testing was done on 462 patients, and it identified that in 60.61% of patients who received EMG nerve conduction studies, the management, their physical therapy management, changed because of the results that we got from the diagnostic testing. So you see how important that can be and how it can affect outcomes that we will receive from the physical therapy treatment, from the physical therapy care. And these are the types of tests that you can do diagnostic-wise as a physical therapist, and they are reimbursed to a physical therapist. So as I said in the beginning of my presentation, I will discuss with you ideas on how to increase your reimbursement rates, right? And as part of compliance, as I mentioned, is having that patient to also buy into these additional type of things that you believe as a physical therapist this patient can benefit from. That's part of complying. That's part of a compliant patient. And there are many different things that can have a clinical value, and at the same time, it can offer additional revenue to your practice, such as laser, doing a private exercise, gym services, nutritional products, wellness services, vitamins, other white labeling products. Of course, in my case, I am very biased in the area of diagnostics because this is what I have been doing and I have been helping many others around the country to do. And they have increases in per visit reimbursement anywhere between 24, 25 to 47% in terms of increase in reimbursement per visit as a result of performing diagnostic testing. So patient compliance can have very important and many different effects in the physical therapy practice, both clinical effects as well as financial effects. I'll be happy to entertain any of your questions as you are typing them in the chat section right now. And I am going to enter right here my email address, which is dimi@handsonpt.org. If I don't get the chance to answer all of you who are typing right now in the chat section, please feel free to email to me and I'll be very happy to answer back to you. Once again, thank you very much for attending this presentation, and Chad and Carl and the rest of the Breakthrough team, thank you for the amazing job that you are doing in helping all people in private practice achieve better conditions for their patients and for their practices and for the future of physical therapy. Thank you.
All right. That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast and that you got some gems, ideas, and tips that you can use in your clinical practice that can create a difference in the way you practice and the way you profit. I hope to see you all next week. Until then, have a wonderful week.